This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
How we doing, everybody? Welcome to a new edition, a brand spanking new edition of Rico Bronya. We are recording this, or you're watching this live on a very, very late Saturday night into Sunday morning, because we have a niblet of Met catnip. I wouldn't even call it news. I would actually call it a Scott Boras special. Scott Boras leaks information to his guys. One of his guys is John Heyman. And that little bit of Met catnip obviously involves the New York Mets and Juan Soto. So if you are listening on Sunday morning or listening live on a Saturday night, here's what you need to know. The New York Mets, according to John Heyman, I mean Scott Boras, according to Scott Boras, I mean John Heyman, the New York Mets and Steve Cohen had a, quote, very detailed meeting with Juan Soto in California. According to Scott and John, Mets owner Steve Cohen led a contingent of high-ranking Met officials to meet with superstar free agent hitter Juan Soto Saturday in Orange County. All early signs suggest the meeting went extremely well, and the Mets remain viewed as one of the favorites for the services of Soto, who helped the Yankees reach the World Series in his initial season in New York and is the top priority of both New York teams. So, a couple of things. When does a meeting go badly? Or if a meeting does go badly, when do we hear about that? Within days of the meeting or within hours of the meeting? I remember LaMarcus Aldridge was a free agent in the NBA many years ago in the prime of his career. And it came out well after the fact that his meeting with the Lakers didn't go that well because he thought it was all about glamour and Hollywood, and it wasn't about what he cared about, which was basketball, X's and O's. When he met with San Antonio and Greg Popovich, that's what they kind of talked about, and he ended up signing with the Spurs. But if memory serves correct, like, that information came out after the fact, like after the decision was made. When you're in the process of making a decision, especially in the case of Soto, where there's no salary cap. There's no max contract to hand out. Literally, you're just trying to drive the price up as much as you can. There are no bad meetings. So while as a Met fan, you hear, yes, Steve met with him. Yes, David Stearns met with him. And yes, ooh, very detailed. It went well. This is great. I'm fantasizing about Juan Soto on my team. And all that may be true. When does a meeting go bad and it's leaked out that it went bad? And let's not forget the Boston Red Sox had a meeting with Juan Soto, and I remain skeptical that Soto and the Red Sox are actually going to agree to a marriage, but they met with him, and they had a great meeting. And it was very, very impressive. And the Blue Jays reportedly had or will have a meeting. And I'm sure that will be very impressive. So I don't mean to throw cold water all over this, or at least this of the meeting went well. Of course the meeting went well, and the meeting was going to suck. Or Steve Cohen was going to walk in there and say, "Yeah, you know what? We don't know what the hell we're doing. We're a bunch of idiots around here." Or something that was going to turn Juan Soto off. This is, I want to make this very clear so we all know what's going on. This is Scott Boras being Scott Boras. This is Scott Boras telling the Yankees, telling the Red Sox and the Blue Jays, "Well, you better watch out for the Mets." Not only does Steve Cohen have a lot of money, but boy, they were really detailed about their plans, not just for Juan, but for the future of the organization. Same thing they did when a report out of Boston came out a few days ago that the meeting went well. Now, you could argue that these leaks sometimes come from the franchise because the franchise wants to show their fans that they're taking winning seriously and they're trying to get the player. But what I would warn the Mets, the Red Sox, or any other franchise that does leak stuff like this out, having a productive meeting with Juan Soto is not impressive. Signing Juan Soto is impressive. We as fans, especially fans of the Red Sox and fans of the Mets, we're not impressed by you trying to get a player. We're impressed by you getting the player. So I don't believe necessarily the Mets leak this out or the Red Sox leak their story out. It's Scott Boras leaking it out. It's Scott Boras telling America and telling all these different teams, "Hey, boy, Mets are tough. You better up that ante. Red Sox, they're pretty appealing." They're telling Juan about, "Boy, think about all the great Dominican players that played for the Red Sox. You could be next in line." Look, I'm sure there are a lot of great pitches that every team can come up with. At the end of the day, and this is so big for our owner, for the owner that we all love right now, this is his moment to show us all that he's legit. Now, I get he's spent. He has spent. The Mets had the highest payroll in baseball, and I appreciate that. And what he did with buying off the contracts of Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander to get prospects, I appreciate that too. I don't think there's any doubt Steve Cohen is a big market owner. He is a far cry from what we experienced with Jeff Wilpon and Fred Wilpon. But what he needs to prove right now to all of us is that he's not just a big-time owner. He's the guy we're waiting for. You know, you see that clip the other day that came out. He did an interview on CNBC, I think it was. And Steve drops, "I want to win. Money doesn't matter. I want to win." And what I would say to Steve is prove it. Now, you've proven it to a degree. Don't get me wrong. Again, I appreciate the money that you have spent on this team. But if you really believe money doesn't matter, I got to go win, then I'm sorry. This guy who's a free agent, this 26-year-old in the prime of his career, that's the guy you buy. Because for the most part in free agency, and we just did a podcast a couple days ago with all the starting pitchers that are out there, we're going to do a few coming up over the next few days on relief pitchers and position players. It is rare that you have somebody this good and this young available in free agency. So while I love hearing how detailed the meeting was, it was a quote big production, make the highest offer. That's it. You have to make the highest offer. I have some emails we'll get to on this pod today from Met fans actually arguing against Juan Soto, and we'll hear them out and I'll read them and I'll respond, because obviously I disagree. This is the guy you go after. Doesn't mean he's the perfect player. He's not the perfect player. There is no perfect player. Doesn't mean there isn't risk at the end of a 15-year contract. Of course there is. But this is the free agent you wait for. And if you talk yourself out of Juan Soto because of whatever you want to come up with, his defense is average, his base running isn't great, I can't give 15-year contracts, I promise you this. If you find enough reasons to talk yourself out of Juan Soto, you'll talk yourself out of every free agent ever. That's the reality. You will always find a way or a reason to not go after a player if you're going to find reasons to not go after Juan Soto. So I'm glad they had a very detailed meeting. I would love to be in one of these meetings and just hear everything that's said. You know, if you met with him for 3 hours, we had heard in the Red Sox report that the Red Sox met with him for like 4 hours. What the hell did you do for 4 hours? Like, what did you do that kept his attention for 4 hours? Did you go through the whole minor league system? Like, did you really break down everybody in the system and explain that to him? And you also hear, we're not sure if money was discussed. Heard that in the Red Sox report, hearing that in this New York Post report. We don't know if money was discussed. Okay, well, that's the end-all be-all to this whole thing. So all of these other discussions about the farm system and how they treat families and the luxury suites being really nice and how great the locker rooms are and kissing his ass for an hour and a half or whatever else you do in these big presentations, these big meetings, understand that all of that is like in fifth place or ninth place compared to how much money you're willing to offer. Because that's what it's going to come down to. But you think to yourself, all right, what did the Mets put together in this big presentation? And what's always dangerous about this, and again, money will cure all, is you think back to like the LeBron presentation that everybody put together in his first foray into free agency. Come on, LeBron. Remember that whole lame thing? Come on, LeBron. You don't know what the individual is really looking for. And that's what makes this really, really tricky. So in the case of Juan Soto, and I'll use the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Mets as examples. I guess I could use the Blue Jays too. So if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, your selling point can be you're Mr. Canada. You will become the most popular athlete in our country. You will represent the Maple Leaf like nobody else. God knows Johnny Hockey can't win. Pajama Boy John Tavares can't win. You'll blow them away. You're Juan Soto. You will be Mr. Canada, right? So I guess they can put together a presentation like that. The Red Sox can kind of appeal to his, hey, you loved David Ortiz growing up. You loved Manny growing up. You loved Pedro growing up. You love all these great Dominican players that came to the city of Austin, became legends. You're next in line. Now, I have no idea if something like that from Canada or the Dominican hero in Boston, part seven, I don't know if any of that's going to appeal to him. Now, think about the Mets and the Yankees. So the Yankees can go with the, we've won all these championships. We have Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, Lou Gehrig, Yogi Berra, Derek Jeter. You and Aaron Judge can be the face of the new dynasty. You can be the Babe Ruth of 2025 and beyond. You can be Derek Jeter. The Mets could take that and say, well, hold on a second. You can win five titles with the Yankees. You could even win a championship in Boston. They're going to love David Ortiz more. They are. He broke the curse. They're always going to love Jeter more. They're always going to love Judge more. They're always going to have these other Yankee icons that will be above you. Now, with the Mets, and I don't know, maybe this was the presentation. Maybe it was. With the Mets, you win here, you'll become the biggest icon in the history of the franchise this side of Tom Seaver. You could argue that. Because think about this for a second. Who is the biggest icon in the history of the franchise we love? It's not Rico Bronya, despite us having a podcast in his honor. So who is it? It's Tom Seaver. He's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. He won a world championship with them in 1969. Now, it's a shame he didn't pitch his entire career here, but there's a statue outside of Citi Field honoring Tom Seaver. Period, stop, biggest icon in the history of the franchise. His nickname is the franchise. Okay, who's number two? Who's number two? Who represents the 86 Mets, the only other championship this team won? The answer is no one really. Like, Keith's loved, Darryl's loved, Doc's loved, and now they all have their numbers retired, but none of them are necessarily iconic the way Tom Seaver is and the way you'd be. You come to New York, Juan. You win a championship. Dare I say you win multiple championships? There's a statue built for you. Hey, Juan, how many Hall of Famers have a Met hat on? You could ask him that. And then you could tell him. You could explain to him, it's not a very long list. Tom Seaver does. Mike Piazza does. By the way, you could argue that Piazza was a better Dodger than Met, but whatever.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You can be that. Here's what's dangerous about all of these faux presentations I gave you. I don't know what Juan Soto wants. Juan Soto may hear that icon for the Mets and say, nah, that doesn't do it for me. I want to win as many championships as possible. I want to be a part of the history that the Yankees have, even if I'll never be above Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Derek Jeter. I want to be a part of that. So what's always so difficult, this is why you kind of have to scout it out. What does he want? Because all of those things that I just gave you with the Boston angle, the Yankee angle, the Met angle, the Blue Jay angle is kind of weak, but I'm trying here. Juan Soto could be turned off by some of those. He could be turned off by all of those. He could be saying to himself, this is all a colossal waste of time. This whole meet and greet, what are we doing? Give me $700 million. That's the mystery of all this. What's the thing that's truly going to appeal to Juan Soto besides the money? And over the next few days and weeks, we're going to get an answer. That's the one thing that's kind of relieving about all this. Like the Juan Soto talk, which has been incessant, and we've done a lot of it here on the Rico, but we've also talked about the other aspects of what the Mets are looking for. It's going to end soon because it has to end soon. Because, A, Juan Soto doesn't need to have it continue very long because at the end of the day, he doesn't need to wait it out the way Bryce Harper and Manny Machado did to bring his price up. I think that anyone who's interested in Soto is going to make their big offer. They'll respond to the other big offers, and that's going to be it. So I think we're going to get an answer. I made this prediction on Evan and Tiki a couple weeks ago. I think we're getting our answer either early on or right around the winter meetings. I don't think it's going to expand much after that. The winter meetings are the first week of December. So I think we're going to get an answer.
Do you think there's a possibility that this doesn't even get to the winter meetings?
You know what? Yes. Yes, because the winter meetings may not even be necessary. It's more of a benchmark you look at in early December. But if he's already meeting with teams, and we've heard of the Boston meeting, the Toronto meeting, the Met meeting, the Yankees are apparently meeting him on Monday. That was also in the John Heyman New York Scott Boras report. And the meetings are done. And I don't know if Juan needs a second meeting. I don't know if it's like, all right, I met all these teams. I had phone conversations secretly with a few other teams. Now let's get to the offers. If that's the case, then we could get, technically we could get an answer before Thanksgiving, which would be the dream. I mean, getting the answer next week and the days leading up to Thanksgiving, that'd be fantastic. I wouldn't predict it, Hoff, but I wouldn't rule it out only because it doesn't necessarily need to go much longer than this once teams are making their highest offers.
Well, listen, I appreciate that. I kind of hope that's the way to go because I just want to, as a Met fan, I think as any fan, you think that winter meetings, you're going to be productive. You feel like that's where you're really going to set the stone of where you see your team being and how you're going to build your team. If you could go into winter meetings and Juan Soto's already off the table, you kind of know where you're heading.
Yeah, you know, okay, this is what we have to do. It changes kind of everything about your offseason. Now, I do want to address something, and I think it's kind of related to it. Greg Brunswick sent an email. He was very upset with me, and he was upset with something I said on the radio show I do with Tiki, in which I talked about the Mets, and I talked about the year they had in 2024, and how it reminds me of 2000, in which it was a great year. Mets had a great year in 2000, got to the World Series. But when you really look at the roster, and you look at, especially in this year's case, the guys that are free agents, the Mets have to respond with a big offseason. That running it back, which is almost what the Mets did in 2000, minus losing Mike Hampton, is not enough. And I was making that point that this is a very important offseason for the Mets, not just in terms of go get Juan Soto, but even if they do succeed in the Juan Soto sweepstakes, they got a lot to do. They have a lot of innings they need to replace in their starting rotation. They've got a lot of bullpen questions. And even offensively, they got a lot of questions. We know Vientos. We know Lindor. We know Nimmo. We know Alvarez. Those are 4 out of 10, including DH. Really 9, because pitcher is kind of separate. That you have questions on. Is Pete Alonso coming back? Who's the first baseman? Who is the second baseman? Are you running it back with McNeil? Is it Iglesias? Is it one of the younger players? Who's the center fielder? Who's the right fielder? Is it Starling Marte? Who's the designated hitter? They have a lot of questions. And so Greg took something I said. He said, Evan, you said on your show, quote, when you look closer, the Mets were not that good last year. I find that statement extremely disappointing, sad, and infuriating in equal measure. The Mets went 67-40 to end the season, meaning they played 626 baseball for exactly the final two-thirds of the season, a la a 101-win pace. And then they went 5-2 against two division winners in the first two rounds of the playoffs with 5 of the 7 games on the road. They weren't that good. In addition to the magic, this team proved beyond a doubt they were legitimate. They pitched well, they fielded well, they hit well, they played really hard, and they knew how to win. Your sentiment that they weren't very good is not a realist take. It's a joyless one, and it's hurtful to hear from one of our own as if this team was some kind of fluky joke. So I want to address this because it may be my fault that I didn't express this well enough. It's not that last year wasn't real. It's not that last year was all fluky, and it's not that they weren't that good last year. It's that I can't expect them to be that good next year without changes. Last year is last year. By the way, we're going to have an award show debuting Sunday night. And then, of course, you could download it anytime after that. Or we're going to hand out awards from the 2024 season. And you will hear in that podcast my joy. It was a joyful season. What I'm expressing, even if it may come out the wrong way and harsh, is that they have to have a monster offseason to offset either the guys that are free agents or the guys that aren't going to match their performances from a year earlier. That doesn't mean I don't think they were good last year. They were great last year. Last year's over, though. Last year's results are in. They won 89 games. They won 2 rounds of the postseason. They got within 2 wins of a World Series. All facts. You mentioned what they did to close the season. All facts. I'm not arguing with that. They had a wonderful season. But, and here's the caveat, they have 550 innings that are free agents. Even if you bring those 550 innings back, do you think they replicate the performance of last year? Honest question. Honest question. Do you think if they ran everything back the same way, you think Jose Iglesias is hitting 337? Do you even think, and this one's probably the harshest of it, do you think Lindor replicates his season? I love Lindor. Francisco Lindor had an incredible year, and I don't think he's going to fall off a cliff. That's not what I'm suggesting, but he had his best year as a Met. He had an MVP year. Do you think he's going to do that again? Do you think he's going to replicate the incredible second half he had? So it's not to downgrade last year, Greg, or anyone else who took that way. It's not. It's how important it is to add this year. The Mets screwed this up in 2000. They had very different ownership, but they screwed it up. They screwed it up by losing Mike Hampton. Maybe not all their fault. the school system of Denver was very good. But you lose Mike Hampton. You know what they should have done in free agency? Sign Mike Mussina. They were never even involved. And he signed with the New York Yankees. Alex Rodriguez, the Juan Soto of that era in terms of age and awesomeness, wanted to be a Met, and they screwed it up. So I do think it's very similar. And my warning to Steve Cohen, don't let Juan Soto become A-Rod. Don't let that opportunity be missed. I'm telling you right now, and I think some Met fans will excuse it, they can't miss on this guy. It doesn't mean they can't build a winner without him. It doesn't mean there isn't a fine plan B. There is a fine plan B. We'll lay it out. There are ways for this team to feel improved off of last year without signing Juan Soto. I admit that. But that's not their best plan. That's not the best of the best plans. The best plan is to get the 26-year-old guy in his prime. And I'm afraid that if they don't, for whatever reason, but really the reason that would annoy us is not being the highest bidder. Again, if Juan Soto takes less money to stay with the New York Yankees, you have to respect that. Now, you could argue that Steve should have gone even higher, depending on what that highest bid offer was. It was one of the arguments I made about Yamamoto last year. If you wanted him, don't bid 300, don't bid 325, bid 400. May sound crazy, but that's the truth. So I think that the Mets have to have a very aggressive offseason. Let's see if they can back that up. Now, let me get to some of your emails concerning Juan Soto. Lance writes, the Mets need to keep Pete, try for Juan Soto, but I actually agree with Ron Darling about Juan Soto. Dynasties are built by keeping a core together. Like the Yankees in the 90s, I don't think they had any of the top 10 or even more hitters in the game, but they had bonded and were clutch and had the perfect chemistry. Scott Brosius, Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez. After 2001, they didn't win it again until 2009, and the 4 out of 6. Look at the Astros or the Giants. Keeping a good core is more important than adding one great talent. Okay, so a couple things about this. I'd love for the Mets to be a dynasty. That would be amazing. First, you got to win one before you're a dynasty. I don't think using the Yankees formula from the late 90s and saying, see, that's how you do it, is the answer. They also had a core of Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera and Andy Pettit and eventually Jorge Posada and Bernie Williams. Like, that's not the same core the Mets have. And I think what you do need to do is prioritize great players. I'd love to keep Pete Alonso. I think the Mets, if we're being serious about taking their success of last year and moving it a step forward, I'd keep Pete and sign Juan Soto. Because I think one of the things we forget is, even though Soto's a better player than Pete, if you sign Soto and lose Pete, you replaced a very good offensive player with a better offensive player. But what about the rest of your roster? I would love the idea of keeping Pete, hoping he has a better year, maybe he has the same year, but adding Juan Soto along too. I don't think you should overthink you have to keep this core and signing the superstar doesn't make you a dynasty. Look, every team is built differently. Look at the Dodgers. We all want to be the Dodgers. Their whole core was bought. Mookie Betts was bought. Freddie Freeman was bought. Shohei Ohtani was bought. For the year, Teoscar Hernandez was bought. And oh, by the way, you want to talk about keeping your core? Where's Corey Seager? You see him? They didn't keep him. So I disagree with that. But continuing on, Lance writes, you're bugging wanting him, Juan Soto, for 15 years. Name one contract of 10-plus years that worked after year 6. We at least need an opt-out after 10 years. Look at Stanton, and the deal seemed great at the time, and I think he was as young as Juan Soto. Trades are always available mid-season now that our farm system is better stocked. And if Soto, is Soto really worth double Pete Alonso's salary or almost double Lindor's? Well, a couple things. He's not getting double Lindor's. Lindor's making $34 million a year. I'm not suggesting, nor am I expecting Juan Soto to get $68 million a year. Now, as far as the years are concerned, if you look back at the longest contracts in the history of baseball, most of them have been signed over the last 5 years, so we don't have an answer to it. Fernando Tatis Jr., Well, Wander Franco, I think we do have an answer to. Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers. Like a lot of these contracts, Trey Turner signed a 10-year deal. Francisco Lindor, like a lot of these contracts are recent, so we don't have an answer on if they worked out or not. As far as Albert Pujols and Joey Votto, what I would tell you is look at the age. Robbie Cano, look at the age. Juan Soto's 26. If you gave him a 15-year contract, that would be equal in terms of age when it ends as a Pujols and as a Cano. And I'm willing to tell you, you're right in terms of the last few years maybe not being great. But if you can have Soto in his prime, let's say till he's 37, which I think is reasonable, or maybe not in his prime, but a very, very productive offensive player until he's 37 years old, that's 11 years of the contract. I think that's a win. I think if you're getting 11 awesome years out of Juan Soto between being the guy he was this past year with the New York Yankees and, let's just say, really good, I think that would totally be worth it. So I disagree with you about that part. I would not be deathly afraid of the amount of years it's going to take to get him, because I think if you can get 8 or 9, and I just said 10 years of Juan Soto being a great player, I think it makes it completely worth it. And I think we would all look back on it and say, yeah, that move was awesome. The other thing sort of breaking tonight is Will Salmon, great reporter from The Athletic, says that the expectation is, despite Luis Severino loving New York, he's not going to accept the qualifying offer. So I would say it's good news and bad news. I think it's the beauty of the qualifying offer. The good news is, if the Mets don't re-sign Luis Severino, they just got a draft pick. And that's great, especially considering this is going to be an offseason in which they're going to be really aggressive in signing guys who have draft picks attached to them in free agency, a la Corbin Burns, a la Juan Soto. So the good news is, hey, if he doesn't come back, at least the Mets get something out of it. The other thing is, it may be better in terms of luxury tax, in terms of your ability to do other things, if you can get Sevy on a multi-year deal with his AAV being lower than what the qualifying offer is this season. I would like Severino back. I think the Mets need to sign 2 or 3 starting pitchers. We went through this on the starting pitching Rico Bronya that we did. But there are other options besides Luis Severino. So let him kind of look at the market. Let him see what he can get. I feel like I don't want to give him any more than 2 or 3 years. I wouldn't mind a third year, maybe a fourth, probably not, if there's some kind of vesting option that has something to do with innings pitched. So if he pitches, great. Keep the contract going. You go out there, you take the ball every 5 days, which Sevy was able to do in 2024, but something he was not able to do basically the last 5 years, then fine, bring him back. But this is a part of why this offseason is so important. They have a lot of innings they need to replace. And quite frankly, they have a lot of offense they need to replace. Jose Iglesias played 90 games and hit .338 and had the third highest WAR on the New York Mets. He's a free agent, and if you keep him, you have no idea he's going to give you the same production. Pete Alonso, for all the crap he gets for the year he had, hit 34 home runs. Okay, you lose him, you have to replace him. And keep this in mind. I said this before about Soto. Soto's a better player than Pete. We all know that. If you lose Pete and you sign Soto, don't think for a second you're done building this offense. That wouldn't be good enough. You think that's good enough? You think, go around the diamond and think about what that lineup would look like. Who's the center fielder? Who's the DH? Who's the first baseman? Oh, it's Vientos. Who's the third baseman? Anyhow, I like to read instant reaction email. So those that are watching right now, Rafael Vasquez writes, setting yourself up for disappointment. And he sent the email 30 seconds ago. So I'm assuming he's responding to what I'm saying about Juan Soto. But Rafael, I appreciate it. That we will start to get the YouTube active as well on questions and comments. And we can be very interactive. But Rafael writes, first off, I'd love to have Juan Soto. at the right price. However, if the contract starts climbing to $650 million or more, I don't think it's a smart move. Baseball is unique compared to other sports. One player alone can't carry a team to a championship. The reason we made it as far as we did last year is because we had a cohesive team. Not the most talented roster, but a group of productive players up and down the lineup. That, to me, is more impressive than simply acquiring a superstar every year but lacking depth like the Yankees. If the Mets don't land Soto, I still trust David Stearns to build something great and sustainable. Money doesn't always guarantee championships. Building a strong roster and stacking the franchise with depth is the way to go. Soto is undeniably a difference maker, but he's not the be-all, end-all. I hope we get him, but either way, I trust Stearns to make us championship bound with or without him. So, yes, the Mets can win a championship without Juan Soto. I'll give you an interesting stat. I've said this before, makes me chuckle every time. You'll probably think it's dumb. That's okay. Since 2019, really since 2020, every team that has not, or a team without Juan Soto, has won a championship every year. So I get it. Juan Soto is not magic, but he's a great player. And when you have great players, you have a better chance at winning a championship. And for anyone who says this, because Rafael just said it, oh, it's more impressive to not buy the great player every year. The Dodgers just did that. Like, literally. Mookie Betts was bought before 2020. Freddie Freeman was bought before 2022. Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto were bought before 2024. So what the hell are we talking about? Aren't they the team we're admiring? They just won the World Series. All they do is buy great players. Now it's bad? It's not bad. Also, why 650 the cutoff? It seems arbitrary. Seems like, I'm good at 650. 680, though, I can't do it. Why? And if you have enough money, which this owner does, why would there be a cutoff? So I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't. And don't make it out like it's the end-all, be-all. It's not the end-all, be-all. But it makes your chances of winning easier and better. I'm looking for this email about Juan Soto's defense, but I can't really find it. So I'll paraphrase it for you. Evan, do you think Juan Soto can play left field instead of right field? I view him as a left fielder more than a right fielder. Where would the Mets play him if they sign Juan Soto? So there's a few things about this. Obviously, Brandon Nimmo is not going to play center field. I doubt it. David Stearns made that comment at the GM meetings a few weeks ago. They prefer Brandon Nimmo to be a left fielder, or at least not a center fielder. Dimensions have a lot to do with this. I think a part of why Juan Soto was playing right field at Yankee Stadium is that it's an easier right field to play than left field at Yankee Stadium. The dimensions in left field are a lot more spacious. There's a lot more ground to run down. So Alex Verdugo, who is a better left fielder, made more sense for the Yankees in left field. If you look at Citi Field's dimensions, it's actually kind of the opposite. If you go down the left field line at Citi Field, it's 335. If you go down the right field line, it's 330. So it's a little bit deeper down the left field line. But here are the differences. In left center, left field is only 358. Believe it or not, it's one of the shortest left center fields in all of Major League Baseball. That's Juan Soto's power area. So offensively, Juan Soto likes hitting at Citi Field. It's a slight advantage. Maybe they used it in the presentation. But right center field is 375, which is a significant difference. So right field is significantly deeper when it comes to the left center versus right center. If you go to deep left center field, it's 385. Deep right center is 398. So you see right field is a bigger ballpark than left field at Citi Field, which logically would say, hey, he's not a great defensive player. Does Soto fit better in left field at Citi Field than he did at Yankee Stadium? The answer is yes. The answer is undoubtedly yes. But then you got to start figuring in Nimmo. Nimmo's got no arm. And you want to talk about not having an arm? Juan Soto's got a better throwing arm in right field or in left field, anywhere you put him, than Brandon Nimmo does. So even though on paper Soto fits better as a left fielder at Citi Field, do you feel comfortable playing Brandon Nimmo in right field? by the way, this kind of discussion, such a first world issue that I hope we're having after they sign him. I almost feel weird having it right now. But it is a fair question because Soto's played left. He's played right. He has not been exclusive to one spot on the diamond. But either way, the Mets have met with Juan Soto. And now, Mr. Cohen, I ask you, no, I don't ask you. I demand from you, as a customer, as a loyal season ticket holder, show him the money. Show him the money and make him an offer he can't refuse. This is the free agent you've been waiting for. Now go get him. The one question I do have before we wrap up this edition of the Rico Bronya is if the Mets do get Juan Soto and we do that live podcast and we're going nuts and everybody's happy and we're celebrating, how much time before we pivot to what we have to do next? Like, do we have to sit there, Haw, for a week and just marvel at Juan Soto? Or can we move on within a day? Can we move on within 10 minutes? Like, as we're doing the Soto Signs with the Mets podcast, can we start talking about first base, or is there a grace period where we have to wait?
No, there. It's like seconds. Like, oh, Juan Soto has been signed. Good. Here's my laundry list of what we need to do next. That's it. It's done.
Fair enough.
I've made it up already. Well, that'll be in the next episode, maybe.
Well, I look forward to that, Rico Bronya. I do. I really do. We do appreciate you listening. If you're watching us live, thanks for hanging out with us on a late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. If you downloaded this on your Sunday, enjoy your Sunday. We have a Rico Bronya coming up that we will post or we will produce for you Sunday night. And you can download it Sunday night, Monday morning, watch it live on YouTube, in which we are going to have an award show. This upcoming week in Major League Baseball, they're going to announce all the awards, MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, all that crap. We're going to have our 2024 Mets award show. Pete and I will decide all the different awards. We've got 8 different Met awards, MVP of the Year, Cy Young of the Year, Rookie of the Year of the Year, of the Year. I said that twice. Reliever of the Year, Surprise of the Year, Disappointment of the Year, Playoff Performer of the Year, and the Moment of the Year. And we're going to have a whole podcast dedicated to handing out those awards from the 2024 season. So look forward to that Sunday night. We're going to do a deep dive on the reliever market. A lot coming up. And obviously these pop-up live breaking news editions, even if it wasn't really breaking news, more just Scott Boras leaking some information out to us, we try to give you the material as soon as we can. And since Hoff and I like to just sit around on Saturday nights after our kids fall asleep or our wife's out of town, we're always here for you. Right, Pete?
Oh, yes. Listen, I'm watching UFC right now, talking Mets, baseball. I mean, what else would you want to be doing on a Saturday night?
That's right. I mean, we're 40-year-old men. What do you want from us? If we were in our 20s, we'd be out drinking somewhere trying to pick up women. It's a different world now when we're in our 40s. Thank you very much for listening, subscribing, downloading. Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, We'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.